Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, we are here in Healthcare Overhaul City, Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. Any minute now, we're going to have an entirely new healthcare
system. Well, when I say any minute now, I mean any time before 2037.
I'm going to be on the side of saying, having watched Congress over a number of years do a lot of different things slowly, that having three committees basically on board in the House and one and a half committees on board in the Senate, and if they get a House vote before August, that's actually fairly rapid movement.
Oh, fairly rapid. I mean, this.
You know, you've seen those turtle ads with the slow skis?
Right.
That's Congress.
Right. Well, that's true. And it's funny that how Barack Obama wants it before the summer break. And yet, I think even the slow progress that Senate Finance Committee is ostensibly making with Baucus and Chuck Grassley and everything like that, I think that's still far better than anybody imagined at this stage of the game. So maybe by putting a deadline, which was probably illogical from the beginning, it did incentivize.
Yeah, I hate that word. But I think you have a point. I think this was one of the things the president said in his news conference was, if it hadn't been for that deadline, would we be as far along as we
are
today? And the answer is probably not. So, will the Senate Finance Committee have something out of committee before they go away for the August recess? Because I think that is the key.
My guess is no. I know that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said that she has the votes, but I don't think anybody else agrees with her that they think she has the votes, unless she just wants to ram something through.
Right.
And that's a possibility, but you saw the whole blue dog debate.
And right. Well, there are 50-some blue dogs, and let's let the listener know now that we have no idea what a blue dog is.
I understand what a blue dog is.
We do know what the blue dogs are. They're fiscally conservative, moderate, centrist, mostly Southern and Midwestern, sort of Western Democrats who were elected on a somewhat less than liberal set of policies.
That's exactly what you put on their bumper sticker. They are kind of like the boll weevils in the early 80s who backed the Ronald Reagan tax cuts.
Or on the Republican side, the gypsy moths.
But
why do they call them blue dogs? We have to talk about why.
Well, of course, we know what yellow dogs are. Yellow dogs, as I'm a yellow dog Democrat, I would vote for a yellow dog before I'd ever vote for a Republican. But in the early 1990s, after the Republicans took control of Congress in 1994, about 40 or so so-called blue dog Democrats, and Pete Guerin, who's a Democrat from Texas, said that the reason we're calling ourselves blue dog Democrats is that some of the liberals in the Democratic Party have squeezed us so much that we're turning blue.
There are other theories about where this name came from, including a picture of a blue dog that was on the wall in the room where they had their original meeting. There are all kinds of theories about it, but it's basically just a made-up term that comes out of these various roots. And I think we should talk about which way the blue dogs are going to go on healthcare reform. I think Nancy has a fairly good chance that with Obama's help, she can bring those people aboard, especially if the Senate Finance Committee can come to some kind of a deal before the House takes its vote so that the House members know they're not going to be left hanging out to dry, that they vote for something that's kind of going to look radical to some of their constituents, but the Senate's not even going to vote on the same thing.
So actually, in that sense, it makes no sense for the House to vote on anything if the Senate Finance Committee does not come out with a plan, a past plan. And you say that there will be a Senate Finance plan before the summer break.
I don't think all the ink is going to be dry on it, but if they at least have a strong indication that the Senate Finance Committee is going to be able to report something, the House Democrats can then go ahead and say, we're going to complete our process for now, put something out there. You guys get your act together, come back and vote on it in September, get a Senate vote in September, and then we can make a conference committee deal in October.
What I found most interesting about President Obama's press conference this week is that even though the Democrats are fighting among themselves, even though the blue dogs are making his demands, even though the liberals saying, no, we should not compromise and all that, yet President Obama opens up his press conference by talking about Republican obstructionism to the bill when it's really the Democrats who are giving him the biggest headaches.
The White House should really send a thank you note to Jim DeMint. This is the conservative Republican senator from South Carolina, and since South Carolina's Republicans hadn't been making enough news lately, Jim DeMint went out there and said, this is Barack Obama's Waterloo.
If we
beat him here,
Waterloo?
We can break him.
Not as a Des Moines
or Cedar Rapids. Yeah,
right.
But he said that this was a chance for the Republicans to just turn a big corner on this young new president who's been relatively popular for his first 6 months in office, there's where they stop him. And then there won't be an energy bill, and there won't be a financial re-regulation bill, and there won't be all the other things the Republicans object to in the president's agenda.
Every time you think the Republicans might have a strategy for coming back into power or making some use of their role in the opposition, along comes a Jim DeMint who says something that's exactly what the Democrats want. The White House doesn't want to say, I'm battling with the liberals who say I shouldn't compromise.
Single payer.
I'm battling with the Blue Dog Democrats who said it's too expensive. It's much better to go after the Republicans, and Jim DeMint was a very willing foil there.
But in the real negotiations, are we going to run into a personality problem here with Max Baucus's personality?
Wait. Max Baucus' personality? Come on, start again. I mean, really.
Nancy Pelosi, some of her problems within her own Democratic caucus. Is it going to be possible for the Democrats to just all get along so as to send them into the August recess on an upswing with momentum towards actually getting something done, or will it look like it's just all falling
apart? Well, here's the danger. If they don't have something passed, or at least at a committee or something, or one chamber by the August recess, then the lawmakers go home, and then the opposition has a chance to build their argument and their case against Obama and the plan, and that's the last thing the Democrats want. But do I think that there's going to be some kind of a passage before the August recess? I say no. But there will be a vote on Sonia Sotomayor before the August break.
And you know that is enormously important to all this, because if the Sotomayor nomination were not on track, if it were not going to go through with a lot of help from the Republicans, then I think September would look like a real train wreck.
You know that Mitch McConnell is opposed to, and
John
Kyle announced against it, and I expect John Cornyn will also announce against it.
Both of whom were on the committee, in the hearings, Kyle and Cornyn, but who are also people from states with a lot of Hispanics, yet they're in the Republican leadership, and I think Mitch McConnell has set the policy.
Absolutely, but Lindsey Graham's vote was interesting.
Lindsey Graham was, I thought, perhaps the most compelling questioner in the 4 days of hearings. He was working a line of reasoning that was much more of an intellectual engagement, and you couldn't tell where he was going next. He was not predictable. And for him to come out and say, I wouldn't have appointed her, she's not the kind of person that
but
I want to see on the bench.
Count.
But elections count. The president deserves his nominee.
And as conservative as Lindsey Graham is, if you go to some of the conservative blog sites, websites, or blog sites, or blog websites, or Jack Webb, or Jim
the,
Webb.
The blog
with Steve McQueen, you'll find that a lot of them are seeing him as a traitor.
Yeah, well, you know, it's tough to please people who see things in strictly partisan terms or in highly ideological terms. You can't be surprised that people feel betrayed by his vote.
So Lindsey Graham is the number, so far the fifth Republican. It's Olympia Snowe, Susan Collins, Mel Martinez, and Dick Lugar. He's now...
That's a disparate group, too.
Yes, it is.
Yes. How many more votes does she get beyond those five among Republicans? Well, we're assuming she's going to get all 58 Democrats and the two independents.
That's correct. We expect Ted Kennedy not to be able to make the vote. And Robert Byrd did show up after 2 months of being in the hospital for a vote this week, so he may be, the expectation is that he will be there to vote for Sotomayor.
Okay, so 59 on the Democratic side, including the independents.
Plus five, and then you also have maybe Orrin Hatch as a possibility.
I think he's a strong possibility. Yeah. I think Lisa Murkowski from Alaska is a strong possibility. And perhaps two or three more.
Speaking of votes, by the way, I thought there were two things that were very interesting in the Senate this week, and they both got the same number of votes. There were 58 votes to kill the F-22, and there were 58 votes to push for moving from state to state with concealed weapons. And yet, the 58 senators who voted for the Bethune gun amendment failed, so somehow 58 senators voting for a pro-gun thing was a victory for gun control advocates, and 58 who voted to kill the F-22 was a big victory for Obama.
This is, once again, our old friend, the 60 votes in the Senate. Yeah. And they fell two votes shy because two Republicans stepped up and said, look, we are just not that big an advocate of gun rights. I mean, we believe in gun rights, but we don't think that it's a good idea to let people who have a permit for a concealed weapon in one state have a concealed weapon in any state.
And look at the Democrats who voted for it. I mean,
that's the amazing thing. I think the real story here is how many Democrats were willing to go this far with the NRA.
I mean, both Udalls, who are seen as liberals.
Colorado and New Mexico.
Evan Bayh, Tim Indiana. Johnson of South Dakota, Blanche Lincoln, Bob Casey of Pennsylvania. Now Specter voted against it. Speaking of Specter, there's a new Quinnipiac poll that shows...
Tied with Pat Toomey.
Isn't that something? I mean, I don't buy it.
Doesn't surprise me a bit.
But either the Democrats have soured on Specter, and maybe they're looking at Joe Sestak, the Democratic rival.
And a lot of people who do like Sestak are telling pollsters they would prefer to have somebody other than Specter because they'd like to see him look weaker in the polls and help Joe Sestak.
And so I wonder if voting against the gun thing might become an issue for Specter in the 2010 general election, because Pennsylvania is a pretty rural state.
Guns are a big deal in Pennsylvania.
They sure are.
More, perhaps, I would argue, than any other Northeastern
state. As you well
state.
Remember, that's what defeated Joe Clark in 1968 when Richard Schweiker beat him.
I was just going to use the Joe Clark 68 example.
Yep.
Although, of course, in upper New England, Maine, Vermont, guns are very important in those states as well.
And then, of course, when Kirsten Gillibrand voted against the Thune Amendment, a lot of people in rural upstate New York said, well, you know, she's betraying her roots, but that's the Democratic Party. And the Democratic
Party... She needs the Democratic nomination in 2010 before she worries about November.
She has to beat Carolyn Maloney and the Manhattan elite liberals before she goes on to a general election.
Those Manhattan elite
that's
liberals.
Right.
Talk about concealed weapons.
Okay,
all right.
Okay, you start.
Let's talk about some other weaponry. The F-22, supersonic stealth fighter, kind of costly, little pricey, over $300 million a copy, costs $40,000 an hour to fly. We have 187 of them. How many more do we need, Ken, being how there's no other Air Force in the world that can keep up even with our lesser jets?
Well, let's see. If we're going to fight the insurgencies in Afghanistan and Iraq...
Which have no Air Force.
Exactly. I kind of think we need no more.
And that's what Secretary of Defense Robert Gates thinks and the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
And John McCain.
And John McCain, ranking Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee, also his Democratic counterpart Carl Levin on that committee. And yet, their overall committee voted to build some more. And it might have something to do with the fact that the contracts and subcontracts for this particular weapon system are spread across more than 40 states.
You know,
than 80.
You know,
Senators.
The Democrats who voted for the F-22? Barbara Boxer,
John
Dianne
Kerry,
Feinstein.
Chris Dodd,
Joe Lieberman, the two senators from Washington State.
All those Northeasterners, all those PacWest Northwesterners.
Those anti-defense liberals, and yet...
They're supposed to be peaceniks.
But at the same time, if you're talking to Lockheed Martin, and I love them. They were the stars of Laughing.
That's right, yeah, Lockheed Martin.
Lockheed Martin.
I'm Lockheed, you're Martin. I remember
that's
that.
Right. They said that the canceling the F-22 would cost up to 25,000 jobs or perhaps even more.
We'll just have to go back and see how many of those threats really get fulfilled. We hear a lot of that kind of rhetoric whenever these weapon systems are voted on. Hey, you mentioned Chris Dodd a moment ago, and I've been wondering, is he riding his ship at all in Connecticut, where he's been behind in the polls and looking for the first time in his political career to be in danger?
Well, I thought one of his biggest problems was his pushing the bonuses for the AIG executives and all that blah, blah, blah. And I thought that would be just a temporary blip that might go away. But the latest poll against Rob Simmons, the likely Republican opponent.
A pretty attractive Republican.
And the fact is that he's still trailing Simmons in the polls. And we're talking about Barack Obama popular, the Republican brand is really hurting. And yet Connecticut may be one of several states that could theoretically see a Republican pickup. Illinois is like that, too. Mark Kirk, the moderate Republican.
That's right. Mark Kirk is the guy that they had been hoping would run for them statewide, and he's probably going to be a better candidate than they have had statewide for any office in some while.
Absolutely.
And what have the Democrats got?
They have the state treasurer, Alexei Janulius, who will be announcing this Sunday for the Senate. He was running even when there were still questions whether Roland Burris would stay in the race or not.
And he was talking about running even if Lisa Madigan ran, who was their first choice, and Barack Obama tried to get her to run, but she said, no, I'd rather stay here in Springfield and maybe be governor.
But the state treasurer has also some skeletons in his closet regarding some strange financial arrangements. If you add Illinois, perhaps Delaware, if Mike Castle runs for the Senate... the possibility he'll run for the Senate, although there was a very interesting...
Mike Castle is a moderate Republican.
It's like similar to Mark Kirk, perhaps even more...
More moderate, more East Coast moderate.
Yeah, but I thought it was very fascinating to watch on YouTube this week the town hall meeting that Mike Castle had in Delaware. It was about health care, and yet the question all she wanted to know was about Barack Obama's birth certificate, and then the whole audience erupted in, no, show us the birth certificate.
This is a strain in American politics that I think... is probably common in other countries as well. Conspiracy theories that take on a life of their own.
And the internet have a lot to do with it.
Enormously empowering. This incident in Delaware, for example, would have been an isolated incident, except that, of course, it's out there on YouTube, and so people are watching it and thinking they saw it on television and thinking that it was a major event.
One thing we cannot go without mentioning is that Sunday is Sarah Palin's last day as governor of one of the top 50 states of our nation.
Sarah Palin will be moving on to her private sector career starting on Sunday. And unfortunately for her, before she leaves office, she's had one more moment of controversy as an investigator hired by the state to look into some allegations has said that there is some evidence that in collecting money to pay for some of her legal bills,
right.
She took money from people who obviously had business before the state and might be trying to influence her by giving money to her legal defense fund. She says she hadn't ever spent any money from the fund and she didn't have any control of the fund and didn't know anything about it.
There has been one investigation after another from almost day one, and you almost can see why she's glad to get out. And I just wonder how Sean Parnell will deal with the stress, because you know the Sean Parnell era begins on Sunday.
Yes, and Sean will be a guest, and this is a good way to start your era. He will be a guest on the Weekend Edition Sunday program hosted by Leanne Hansen, and people can hear from Sean themselves on NPR.
I'm going to start listening to NPR from now on.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage and Sean Parnell on Weekend Edition Sunday at npr.org/politics.
I'm Sean Parnell. No, I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
I had me a dog and his name was Blue. Well, I had an old dog and his name was Blue. I'll bet you $5 he's a good one too. Singing Yahoo Blue. You good dog, you. Well, old Blue's feet was big and round.